And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 19th, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. You're not a podcast, are you? You're an author and an educator.
I'm not, but I can be a podcast co-host. I'm happy to take that role.
There you go. Mariah, this is 6/19 is an important date, in American history, one that we have touched on a year ago, but it seems even more important now to commemorate. And it is a holiday called Juneteenth. It turns out that the Emancipation Proclamation in the middle of the Civil War, 1862 or 1863, I forget the exact date, 1863, proclaimed, I guess. The proclamation was proclaimed in 1863 by Abraham Lincoln. Of course, they didn't have internet back then in that time, and there was a war going on. And so as it happened, it took a long time for that information that the end of slavery had come to make its way across the Confederacy. And it wasn't until June 19th, 1865, that's almost 2 years later, a Union general arrived in Texas and basically read the Emancipation Proclamation. And that is the origin of the holiday Juneteenth. It's a compression of June 19th, of course, to say Juneteenth. But there you go. This is the day from 1865 on. And I guess a couple of things. One, it is a day that all Americans should take great pride in. I mean, I can't believe that as an American, I have not realized this until this later part of my life, right? That this is this huge American holiday, ought to be a holiday, but is not, right, Mariah? I mean, is that...
Yeah. And, it's funny because I struggle with this in some ways because it's sort of like, it should absolutely be a celebration, but at the same time, it's such an abomination that we need to celebrate the freedom, Mm-hmm. I mean, it should never have been in existence for
in the first place.
For anybody. Yeah, exactly. But, for sure, I think it's I think we should get rid of Christopher Columbus Day and put in Juneteenth instead, right? And I think a lot of states actually are recognizing it. I was reading that at least businesses that are recognizing it as a holiday, giving their workers that day off.
It seems like in this year in particular, it's bittersweet, I guess, is the best word you could put on it, right? This is a time now where, in fact, statues of Christopher Columbus are being pulled down. I think Christopher Columbus here in Boston had his head chopped off, right? And there are statues in Richmond, Virginia in particular, are being pulled down across the country, which is, by jingo. Yeah, I can imagine a few people that ought to be put back up, a few people you could put to replace those guys.
In those places. Just as a side on Christopher Columbus, I think that Baker said, that wasn't the way to go about getting the statue down, but you are right. We should be thinking about this, and we should have probably taken this down a while ago. So,
I think it's a topic for a whole other podcast, but the question of this, it's not violence, but it's certainly action. It gets respect in a way that people have been talking about Christopher Columbus for a long, the inappropriateness of a holiday which essentially honors the whole destructiveness of the, settling of America, right? It doesn't get any respect until somebody takes the head off Christopher Columbus. Then we say, oh, okay, grudgingly, it down. Yeah, So I'm like, okay, if the system was more resilient and listened. Anyway, let's put that aside. That's a whole, the question of June 19th and its contemporary celebration amidst all the stuff that's going on is one that deserves note, right? And if you're listening to this on Friday, June, well, I guess this whole weekend, right, there are celebrations going on of this legitimate human success story, right?
Yeah, I think there's movement for Black Lives is putting on a whole Juneteenth weekend of action, and while there isn't any direct climate action part of this, we'll talk in a minute about how this all connects with climate change. But you know, this Juneteenth weekend of action is they have three main imperatives: to defund the police, to invest in Black communities, and to the final day is devoted to getting the president to the resignation of President Trump, essentially. Those are their three directives for the Juneteenth weekend of action.
Well, there the so Juneteenth. Let's take note of that.
Freedom Day,
Freedom
Jubilee
Day,
Day, those are the other
Juneteenth
names of
Day.
it.
So the I guess the but this is a show about climate and the question of how these things are connected, how racism and climate are connected is one we've been exploring. You know, faithful listeners to the show will have heard us talk about this for a while now, and it's an enormous topic that deserves, you know, it's not a 15-minute thing that we say check off the box that, oh yeah, we talked about that one time. I think that there are profound connections that we speak of, and Mariah, I know I think I speak for you. I always want to tread carefully because we should be listening more than speaking about these topics because they are very, it's very easy. I think you use the word blind spot, right? I mean, it's very easy to have a blind spot and miss something important. But we also don't want to be silent. I guess in terms of listening, though, there was an article published in Grist by Tamara Told O'Loughlin, who is, I'm not sure exactly what it was, pretty high up in 350.org, right? The original Bill McKibben organization. And she wrote a rather impressive article titled, If You Care About the Planet, You Must Dismantle White Supremacy. So there you go. I care a lot about the planet and the people on it. And so I was interested in the imperative, you must dismantle white supremacy. Shall I tell you what I think, what I believe I read in this article, Mariah?
I mean, it's a great article, so I definitely would love to unpack it
Okay, so the so
together.
of course, Tamara Told O'Loughlin is a climate activist and again makes the case, which cannot be repeated too often, I think, that the drivers for the use of fossil fuel, in particular the extraction and processing of fossil fuels, is most heavily burdened on communities of color. Right? That's where all the stuff happens. I think we spoke a week ago of the idea that there are certain sacrifice zones that we just give up on in order to process the nasty chemicals that we all want to power our cars and light our homes. And the people in those sacrifice zones, people are sacrificed, and those tend to be communities of color, right? But the
Right, yeah, it's basically an environmental racism, right? The long-term effects of those fossil fuels are intentionally zoned into neighborhoods, into black communities, making people more vulnerable to the toxic fumes and higher rates of asthma and disease and so on and so forth from factories, highways, pipelines, and compressor stations.
Right, and I mean that it expresses itself now in the COVID issues, which people have probably heard about. But I think when you take a, so there's this like naive, proximate communities of color have the least political power, and therefore are the site for these environmental injustices, right? But the fact that that community has the least political power, you have to ask one step behind that, right? Why is that? And it's in the reason the community has so little power somehow is connected up to the idea that that built into our power systems in this country is a presumption that, oh, I mean, how to say it? I mean, white people matter more than black people, and therefore the black community should be sacrificed in order to preserve the white communities. And that go ahead.
She calls it white supremacist violence. Basically, it's white supremacist violence that's built right into the system where the lives of non-whites are devalued in a violent way.
And the call, which we have made, you know, well before the death of Mr. Floyd, for a just transition. So I think one of the cases that Tamara Towles O'Loughlin makes is that if you're going to talk about a just transition to a clean future, then you must talk about race, and you must talk about the environmental injustices visited on these communities through the use of fossil fuels, right? And so there is this deep connection between fighting climate change and addressing these issues of injustice. And there you go. I mean, I've said just transition 100 times before we got here, and that means something. And it means the you can't build these terrible facilities in on people. You know, it's just unjust, right? I think that I think the other interesting point that O'Loughlin makes is an interesting one to me, because there's a lot of so this article uses a lot of words that are, to some parts of our community, inflammatory, right? To say white supremacy brings up, oftentimes brings up a defensive posture among people who are white, I guess, right? And all of a sudden say, well, I don't wear a KKK hat. I'm not like that. Why do you accuse me of being a white supremacist? And there are certainly egregious examples of, like, David Duke and, you know, these people that are so explicitly, consciously racist in their attitudes. But I think the point that O'Loughlin is making when she talks about white supremacy is not so much that each of us is intentionally and consciously degrading other people. It's that we are sort of complicit, willing participants in a system that values white people more than black people. And that's where the supremacy part comes in. And I think that is the awful recognition that, I guess I'll say myself as who classifies as white, I mean, which is this whole weird thing, right? I mean, that's what you have to look in the mirror and say, yeah, you are part of something. And it's that systemic thing, even though you would never do some, you would never wear a, I mean, I know this is all really sort of distressing stuff, but I mean, just because you're not a KKK member doesn't mean you're not complicit in a systematic suppression based on race. And I mean, that's the most gentle way to put it. So that's one point. A second point, I think, that Tamara Towles O'Loughlin makes, is it one that I find more interesting, the other, because it uses the other big buzzword that's floating around now of defunding the police departments, right? Which, of course, scares the bejesus out of a lot of people. Say, oh, what? You're going to take all the police away. Well, who's going to protect me, you know, from what, right? I mean, that's the first question. And what are you so scared of? If, you know, what was the first most horrible thing that could happen if there was no policeman around? And I'll let people work that out in their own conscience. What she's doing is saying that from a climate perspective, we have oftentimes called for the divestment from the fossil fuel industry. Just divest all the money, put the fossil fuel companies out of business because they are not, they're not part of the solution. And she makes a relation between divesting and defunding the police in the sense that the police, as they are currently structured, are just not part of the solution, and that you can talk about defunding them without saying we're going to have some Lord of the Flies anarchy, or what's the movie where everyone gets to kill everybody, you know, on a given day?
Hunger Games.
Well, Hunger Games, and then there's another one. It's like not Graduation Day, or anyway. Like, no. But I mean, you know, people are afraid that somehow that they're saying defund the police, no police, we have anarchy in the streets. Well, that's not what anybody's saying. Just the same way as you say, take away the oil companies, it doesn't mean you don't have any electricity anymore. It just means you do it a different way. And so I liked her discussion, and I would
Yeah, and I
highly
think
urge people to read it.
the real thing I really liked about it was, saying, let's make way for a world of, this is from her article. Let's make way for a world of visionary care by repairing harms caused to the communities made vulnerable by business as usual. And I think that's a really key point, is that instead of holding on tightly to this thing that maybe is not serving us, i.e. fossil fuels, i.e. White supremacist system, i.e. oppression of anyone, anybody, anywhere. Let's instead turn to supporting communities, community solutions, healing work, reimagining the ways that we can fix these problems from the at the root. And I think that's just a really nice angle to look at it, and a really important angle to look at it. I have mentioned that I'm reading Ibram Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist, and there's so much. It's a wonderful book. I highly recommend it. We've talked about it before, but there's so much good information about how important it is to, not to police communities, but to help the communities, to help, lift them to a place where everyone feels valued. And that's when you start to see the reduction in violence, not by going after them with riot gear and,
Bigger and
the
bigger
biggest
weapons.
gun. I
Yeah.
mean, yeah, so.
Well, I think that, I mean, I am speaking, and again, we are speaking in the sense of, I'll speak for myself, I mean, as a person who hasn't been burdened with these bad things, it's important to listen. And so we want to listen. I think the voice of Tamara Toles O'Loughlin is a good one. We want to listen, but we also want to be sure that we are standing within our own communities and calling out that this is a problem that white people have to solve, right? It's just like we got to look in the mirror and say this is
We
something that
created it.
we created it. We got to fix it, and it's not
Yeah.
going to be fixed by somebody else who comes, but listening, I mean, the solution. So I guess I hope that our conversation tonight or today is taken in that sense that we want to listen, we want to be guided, and we want to be self, I don't know what, not self-actualized, but actually taking action on our own stance to fight what's a human issue. All right, does that make sense, Mariah?
Yeah,
So I hope
definitely.
that everyone listening appreciates and agrees with what we're trying to do. We'll put up links to some of the stuff that we talked about, and there you go. We'll put up links to what we talked about. You can find this podcast on almost any of the major podcast distribution apps. If you want to give a comment, please send a comment to podcast@massclimateaction.net. That's where we take comments. And of course, we're interested in understanding what we don't know. That's why we're asking for comments.
Yeah, what are our blind spots?
What are our blind spots? We'll close where we always close by saying that we need a just and equitable transition, and that takes on more and more consequence. We need a transition to clean energy, but one that provides a just path for everyone in our country and indeed everyone in the world, because that's how we avoid the mistakes of the past. We've got 10 years to do it. We need to use all of the mechanisms, the instrumentalities. How's that for a word? All of the instrumentalities of government, right? Be they regulation, taxation, all those things, but also we need to commit ourselves to a just society, and we're going to do it in the next 10 years. There you go. So thank you very much for being here, Mariah.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. I hope you all have a wonderful Juneteenth. We'll talk to you again
And thanks to
soon.
DR.
Oh,
Thanks to
DR.
DR
Thanks to
Tucker
DR, of course. DR
for
has
his
given us,
leadership
as
too.
always, has given us the grounding for what we need to think about here. We appreciate it. Anyway, happy Juneteenth, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.